The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, Tu Bishvat Sameach.
And to you, we haven't even spoken about Tu Bishvat, but indeed, Tu Bishvat is Sameach. So what is Tu Bishvat, Anthony?
Today is, of course, the 15th day of Shvat, which means it's Tu Bishvat, because Tu Bishvat really literally means the 15th day of Shvat. This is a Kabbalistic holiday, really, the new year of trees. It shows that even our ancestors were very connected to nature and to all things relating to our natural environment, and they even ruled that from the Kabbalah that we have a new year of trees, which of course is today. And in a practical sense, fruit trees in Israel actually advance a year today, so they actually count the age of a tree according to the Tu Bishvat date. But what's quite traditional today is to take partake of the 10 species, various fruits and nuts, to even have a Tu Bishvat Seder. Tu Bishvat has a little bit of so many different chagim. We have more recently, around the 16th century, it was decided that we should have this Tu Bishvat Seder, which of course is very similar to Pesach. It has four cups of wine and it has all of the fruits involved. We also, some people have the tradition of keeping the etrog from Sukkot and perhaps pickling it or keeping it and then eating it on Tu Bishvat as well. So there's a link with Sukkot. And of course, we've got the link with Rosh Hashanah because it's the New Year of trees. So many different links with so many of our chagim, the other chagim. But what I like very much is this idea of the different types of fruits and how they have spiritual meanings. In the first instance, we have fruits and nuts with a very hard exterior, like oranges or bananas or nuts that are very hard on the outside. But if we peel them, we can eat them on the inside. Then we have fruits which are soft on the outside and hard on the inside, like dates and apricots and olives, which have a pip in the inside. And then finally, we have fruit that is eaten whole, such as figs and berries and things like that. And they all have a different spiritualistic meaning. The ones that you can eat whole, more spiritualistic than the ones with a hard exterior, the hard interior. This is all very Kabbalistic. The nice thing is that you can go and eat fruits and nuts for those of us who like that. And in particular, have a look at the 10 species which are traditional on Tu Bishvat to eat.
It is interesting because the whole Seder thing, I think it has become more popular over the last couple of years. It certainly wasn't something that I recall, but an amazing thing to do nevertheless. Let's talk about some of the big stories in Israel. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has spoken to the rabbi who was taken hostage on a Shabbat in Texas. Let's recap that story a little bit.
So the story is that at a shul in Colleyville, Texas, a gunman apparently entered the shul during the time of the service and took the rabbi and a number of the congregants hostage. This hostage drama played out. It was, a reform shul of some sort, because the story says that the service was being broadcast, at least a voice track was being broadcast live on the internet, so that some people who were tuning into the service actually heard some of the events that went in the shul as this gunman entered in the shul. He then held these people hostage for a while. It then turns out after the event that he had been demanding the release of someone who is currently held in the USA for, I believe, terror charges. And he'd gone into the shul to demand, to hold these people hostage and to demand that person's release. The story that we hear now is that the hostage taker has died when the FBI agents entered that shul in order to release the hostages. There was talk by the rabbi after the event that the hostage taker became quite belligerent and that the hostages were considering taking things into their own hands at some point during the period of the seizure. So, quite a significant story and a serious story, not specifically related to Israel. But Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has called the rabbi to give him a little bit of support and, to talk about what happened. He has also spoken to Governor Greg Abbott of Texas to thank him for the efforts by the governor and the state staff law enforcement authorities who went in and brought a peaceful conclusion to that particular event. And he has invited the Texas governor to come to Israel at some point, which seems like it may well be taken up on. But it's an interesting story in the sense that the Prime Minister of Israel found it appropriate and necessary and even desirable to be in touch with those people for an event which really has nothing to do with Israel, but everything to do with the Jewish community. And so when we talk about the link between Israel and the diaspora Jewish community, then it plays itself out in an event like this. You know, does the Jewish community in the diaspora expect the Prime Minister to become involved and to call the rabbi and to call the state governor and to thank him for protecting Jews in his state? Is that something which we feel is necessary, appropriate, suitable, desirable? What do the listeners out there think about this?
It's such an interesting question, because there have also been reports that this particular rabbi is not particularly supportive of Israel. And I was trying to raise the question earlier as to whether that's relevant or not. And my feeling is that it isn't, because this is an act of anti-Semitism. And whether he is Reform or whether he is Orthodox, whether he is a supporter of Israel or whether he is not, it is still about anti-Semitism. And the discussion that goes beyond that really is one that walks into the trap that lands us up at a place where the papers, and here in South Africa they're doing the same, reporting the terrorist as a British man, you know, because right. That's what's safe to do so, and that's what's politically correct. It's okay to call him a British man. It's not okay to talk about that this was a left-wing Islamist, and that was part of the problem as well. So that we can't talk about, but we can talk about the fact. So it's become politicized, and anti-Semitism gets politicized, and then we lose our way in the discussion, because the noise just becomes unbearable.
Well, and the whole link between anti-Semitism and Israel, you know, that particular discussion also comes into the event here, because the Prime Minister of Israel has found it appropriate to react to an anti-Semitic event, a severe anti-Semitic event that's taken place in the diaspora, which, as I've said before, doesn't necessarily draw Israel into the discussion, but yet he's felt it appropriate to say, as the State of Israel, and he as the Prime Minister of the State of Israel, has a certain role to play in reacting to anti-Semitism, because it is so intrinsically linked to who we are. This is a state, it is a Jewish state, and we have a certain role in fighting against anti-Semitism, and he's found it necessary to really go public on that on this occasion. And again, you know, some people would say, let's separate the two out, anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, or anti-Semitism relating to Israel. But I think in the end, it's a very, very difficult separation to make.
I'd love your reaction on 34519 or 0618951019. How relevant are all of these factors? Do we know anything more about the British links, the two people arrested in the United Kingdom? How big is this network?
We don't really know enough to make any significant comment at this stage. I've also heard that two people were arrested in the UK, in Blackburn, I think, just north of Manchester. We know that there's a huge Muslim population, particularly in that part of the UK, in the northwest of the UK. There's a very large Muslim population, some of it quite active, some of it quite belligerent. Some of them have been known to join with forces in the Middle East, have gone out. There's been quite a lot of discussion in the British press over the years about members of the British citizens who've gone out to join Al-Qaeda and to join other militant Islamic forces, and some of them have regretted it and want to come back to the UK. And there's been a rolling story about a young woman who went to marry an Al-Qaeda activist and then regretted all of that and had children since then wanted to return back to the UK, and the UK authorities said, you're not welcome to come back. But, you know, there is an issue there because, of course, as a British citizen, the question is whether they have the right to prevent her from turning back to the UK. So there are certainly discussions in the UK around this issue, and there's certainly a very activist element within the UK, anti-Semitic, anti-Israeli, very a militant Islamic element within the UK. I don't think that that's new. And, you know, there is a certain level of that that does go on within the UK Muslim population.
Absolutely. And this is certainly a story that we will keep an eye on. Former Prime Minister Netanyahu has been negotiating a plea bargain over his corruption case. I believe that he'll be accepting this.
Well, the rumors are certainly reports that have come out this morning have suggested that he's had a meeting last night with his family and with his lawyers, and they have effectively decided to move towards a plea bargain. And there are so many confusing stories coming out about this plea bargain and so many different confusing views about it. Why would Netanyahu want to strike a plea bargain if he is so certain of his innocence? Why would the state wish to strike a plea bargain with Netanyahu if they are so certain of his guilt? These are, the questions which come out, because if you really think that you have a cut and dried case, then why don't you prosecute your case to the end and allow that person then to get either to be free, if that's what the outcome is, or to really pin the charges on that particular person and let them pay the punishment for the crime that was committed. But yet we're seeing both the Attorney General and the Netanyahu family somehow coming towards the center in order to reach plea bargain, which, by the way, has a few very, very important elements to it. The first of which is that the former prime minister will not go to jail, because that's, I think, really the thing that's driving his motivation more than anything else, is that if he is found guilty of these charges that have been leveled against him, he will serve jail time. There seems little doubt about that. So in striking this plea bargain, he is avoiding the possibility of going to jail. And one cannot underestimate the importance of that. It also means that he can avoid necessarily admitting guilt. And I think that that's one of the things that he's trying to do while he's trying to strike this plea bargain, saying that he will give up on certain things. I think he's also trying to avoid admitting exactly what happened. And in particular, this issue of moral turpitude, which is being bandied about a lot because it has quite significant influence over what happens thereafterwards. But if he's found, if he admits to it, and if that is part of the plea bargain, then he will be prevented from taking public office, from doing certain things going forward. And of course, it is, it goes without saying that moral turpitude is something that he's really trying to avoid as much as possible. He doesn't want to have to admit that in any plea bargain, but it would surprise me if the outgoing Attorney General, Avichai Mandelblit, who's due to finish his term as Attorney General in the very near future, if he does not insist upon this charge and admission of moral turpitude, I think it'll be very surprising. But from the state's perspective, what they will ultimately achieve, or at least the most significant achievement for them out of this plea bargain, is that it will effectively take former Prime Minister Netanyahu out of public life for a certain period of time. It will prevent him from taking office, from being a member of Knesset, from being a minister in government. It will effectively take him away from the political arena for whatever period of time is agreed upon in the plea bargain. And I think that there are certain people who would love to see him taken away from the whole political arena. And the question is whether, if he's barred from acting in a political role over the next, say, 4 or 5 years, does that effectively retire him once and for all as a politician, given...
Well, it certainly does seem that way. It's such a fascinating thing, because it really is an acceptance that his days in politics or his career in politics is over.
It may be. I mean, I'm not quite sure how he sees it, whether he thinks he can still make a comeback after that period of time expires and he's, paid his dues, as it were. We understand that Sara in particular, at least if we believe what's written in the press, and of course much of the press is very much angled against her for one reason or another, but we believe that she really does not wish to agree to have him come, agree to withdraw from political life. That was one of the things apparently that she was quite strong on. It seems as if that she may well be overruled on this particular matter. I agree that it looks as if this is heading towards a plea bargain. I think a lot of people will feel badly done by, will feel that he hasn't really answered to the charges and as he should do. But of course, with any case, there is always a risk that you could prosecute and lose. And then, you know, you would potentially be much worse off.
And of course, there is, surely you would look at, or they would look at the fact that it still does create more political divide and divisiveness, which is not something Israel needs when a former prime minister is tried in this way. Surely it's for the benefit of the country that a deal is done where justice is served to a greater or lesser extent.
And also finishes it up once and for all, because this trial is likely to drag on for years, literally for years. And so that certainly won't help anybody's cause. So I can see why a plea bargain might be of some advantage under those circumstances when you give consideration to those issues.
Absolutely. We don't have a lot of time, but I do want to get the sense of what's happening in Libya. Discussions with Libyan leaders are reported to have taken place with a view to normalizing relations with Libya. This is just incredible.
It is incredible. The thing that's so confusing is that we're really not sure who holds the balance of power in Libya. And the latest report is that one of the Libyan warlords, who is anti-government but also is putting himself forward as a presidential candidate, apparently flew into Israel on Thursday on his private jet, having flown via Cyprus and then into Israel, then went back to Cyprus. It is not clear exactly who he met while he was in Israel or what the purpose of his trip was. We do understand that his son had previously met with Israeli intelligence officials last year. But the problem is that he is not in power in Libya right now. And there were reports last week that that Israel had met a Libyan delegation, although that had also been denied. Apparently, the reports were that the Mossad chief had actually met with the Libyan prime minister to discuss normalization. There seems to be quite a lot of chaos in Libya right now, and it's not exactly clear to me why Israel is so intent upon making Libya one of its next targets for normalization. I mean, I know that we do want to create friends in the international community, and it would be very nice to strike a peace deal with another North African Arab country, Muslim country. But Libya seems to be in a bit of a mess right now. And so I'm not quite sure if we're going to be doing ourselves any favors by striking a peace agreement with either one of the two parties, because potentially in the situation, it could be seen as a snub to the other party. So not sure exactly where all of this is being driven right now, but there does seem to be quite a lot of effort being invested in trying to bring Libya to the party and to make them one of the next countries that Israel normalizes relations with.